This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Before I begin, I want to chat about an anonymous survey I'm taking of my listeners. I hope you'll participate because your participation helps me to get sponsors. Just go to PersonalLifeMedia.com and click on the listener survey ad on my show page and episode pages. Please take a moment to click over to PersonalLifeMedia.com and take my listener survey. Thanks so much for supporting your purpose-centered life. Today's is the eighth episode in a series called Handling Toxic Criticism. In this series, we look at the terrible toll that criticism takes, how it interferes with your ability to live your life purpose, and what you can do to reduce the effects of criticism in your life. Today's episode is called Using Dear Critic Letters. Let's begin. You've just been criticized. You feel your face turning beet red. You want to defend yourself, but your brain is turned to mush. You want to hide, but you know that running out of the room will feel just too humiliating and will make you feel even worse than standing right where you are. What can you do to deal with the seething emotions that are making it impossible for you to think straight and deal adequately with the criticism? There are many things you might have done to prepare yourself for this moment. We've discussed six of them so far. You might have gotten so clear on your life purposes and your life path that your existential filter traps most criticism before it has a chance to do any damage. You might have gotten so practiced at appraising situations, and especially so practiced at waving away most criticisms as not important enough to consider, that you feel equal to handling criticism in a level-headed way. You might have adopted a phlegmatic philosophical attitude that allows you to brush aside most criticism as commentary on the foibles of human nature and not anything that reflects on you. You might stand ready to deal with your self-talk and your personality and feel confident that you will take the appropriate action, should action be required of you. In fact, you might have already transformed yourself into somebody better able to dismiss most criticism out of hand, and better able to manage and process the remaining criticism. You might have transformed yourself already. But even if you have, you will still want to possess tactics for dealing with that portion of toxic criticism that makes its way in and inflames your emotions. One tactic to deal with this remaining criticism is to acquire the habit of writing Dear Critic letters. If you know that as soon as you get home, you will be able to vent your feelings and process the toxic incident in private, you will feel more grounded, present, and powerful in the moment. A Dear Critic letter is a letter that you write but almost never send. In it, you address the person who has criticized you and let him know about the anger, displeasure, sadness, or other emotion that his criticism provoked in you, your sense of outrage, injustice, or betrayal, and your feelings about the unfairness of his criticism, if it seemed unfair, or about its delivery, if it seemed cruelly delivered. In your Dear Critic letter, you get everything off your chest. Your goal in this letter is, first and foremost, to freely vent and release the toxins that are circulating in your system. It is excellent to just vent. Many people do not have permission to own their feelings. They feel angry, but they do not feel comfortable feeling angry and look for ways to not feel angry by rationalizing away their feelings, self-medicating, denying that anything happened, and so on. There can be serious negative consequences to venting in public and laying into the person who criticized you. But those negative consequences do not attach to a letter you write but do not mail. Writing a Dear Critic letter is the equivalent of pounding your fists, screaming, or engaging in some other delicious venting activity. Dear Critic letters allow you to vent. They serve a second purpose that is even more important. They allow you to process the incident and begin to own your part of the criticism. You express your feelings, but you also appraise accurately and mete out responsibility fairly. In the following Dear Critic letter, a young painter apportions blame while venting her feelings about one of her painting instructors. The letter goes as follows. Dear Mr. Jones, I am writing to object to your scathing final criticism of my semester of painting. First of all, I know I wasn't working to my potential. I was going through all sorts of personal issues, from my parents' impending divorce to my own drinking and drug problems. I'll take responsibility for that. However, you had no right to tear apart my work the way you did. I left feeling that I could never take another painting class again, and I just realized that I haven't, that I'd never be a good enough painter, and that I should be ashamed of my very existence. I fought hard not to burst into tears, as I had too much pride to let you see my emotional response, but afterward I was so depressed that I don't even remember what I did next. Probably I went to the student union and drank beers, or found a friend and smoked some pot. Yes, I wasn't together. But still, I didn't deserve your scathing review, even if I sometimes failed to show up for class, or even if I failed to complete much of my work. I've been punishing myself for my part in all of that, and I need to stop. I hope that writing this will help put both our parts of that disaster into perspective so that I can begin to heal. I wish I'd chosen a better instructor. I wish I hadn't let my anguish, fear, and low self-esteem prevent me from painting, and I truly wish you could have been more of a human being. Now I need to put this where it belongs, in the past. Sincerely, Tabitha. I think that you are beginning to get a sense of what I'm proposing, that you transform yourself into a person who stands in a different, better relationship to criticism, and that you acquire an arsenal of tactics and strategies that help you deal with the criticism that comes your way. You want to be transformed, and you want to be armed. That ends today's show. I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll tune in next week for another episode of Your Purpose-Centered Life. If you subscribe to Your Purpose-Centered Life, you won't miss a single episode. To subscribe, please visit personallifemedia.com or look for Your Purpose-Centered Life in iTunes. You might also want to visit my blog, where many guest correspondents write about issues of interest in the secular humanist, skeptical, free-thinking, existential, and atheist traditions. My blog is available at the personallifemedia.com website. If you'd like to drop me an email, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is eric@personallifemedia.com. And I hope that you'll visit my website to learn more about my books and services. To visit, please head over to ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. Thank you for listening. Oh, and a last reminder about the anonymous survey I'm taking of my listeners. I hope you'll participate. Just go to personallifemedia.com and click on the listener survey ad on my show page and episode pages. Thanks so much for supporting Your Purpose-Centered Life.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.